You're listening to Alan James on Circle of White Light Radio and People's Internet Radio, focusing on solutions and thinking different.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Circle of White Light Radio with myself, Alan James. It's the 19th of September, 2021. Good evening, folks. And I hope you all feeling okay with all these energies that are kind of going on at the moment. Everybody seems to be up and down and fed up and just annoyed at what's going on and just want to move on. And oh, my God, there's loads of things going on at the moment. So anyway, we will be getting in and talking about that because there's loads of energy changes going on. And I had a quick chat with my guest, Rachel Alexander. Now, I love Rachel. It's great when she comes on the show because psychology is one of my subjects that I love. And I love talking to Rachel about it. And we always end up having a great chat. We might not fix the world, but we do have a great chat about things. And that's the whole thing. Educate people more about the psychology of human nature and how we work and how we can work with each other and what to look out for and what to avoid and all that kind of stuff. So, and all that's part of psychology and human nature. And we're going to be getting into that tonight anyway, Rachel. So I look forward to chatting to her in a few minutes. Before we do that, let's find out what the communication channels are.
The communication channels are email, contact us at circleofwhitelight.com, by phone 046-927-1212, or sign up to our newsletter via our website at circleofwhitelight.com.
So there you go, communications. Sorry, folks, I have a bit of a sore throat as well, so sorry about that if I'm feeling a bit hoarse or a bit rough. Right, communication channels are, you know, the website, circleofwhitelight.com. I'm on Patreon, which is patreon.com/COWLR, and PayPal on the website. Again, thanks to everybody who donates. You know, I say every week, but I do mean it because we allocate funding and donations every month to a worthy cause. We haven't done any allocation this month for September. That's still on the cards. We have to sort something out about that. If not, we'll roll it over to October and then we'll make a donation to a charity or community group or whatever. We'll see what group we're going to donate to. But that's what we try and do. As you know, every month we try and do that. And if you want to see the groups that we donate to, go over to circleofwhitelight.com, click on the pay it forward at the top of the website, and you'll see everybody who's received a donation to their cause. And there you go. That's it. It's all transparent. If you want to send an email in to contact us at circleofwhitelight.com, hello to everybody logging into the chat room at the moment. Good evening to everyone there. If you have any questions for Rachel or myself on the chat room, just put the word question in. And obviously, I'll put it on the list to ask Rachel. Right, before I bring Rachel in, as usual, I have a few things to chat about. The first one is there's a website called visiontimes.com. And on that website, the article says, Israeli health minister on live mic says vaccine passports exist to influence the hesitant. Our Israeli's Minister of Health told a peer in response to a question about the country's Green Pass vaccine passport that the country's pandemic problem is attributed to the unvaccinated and the purpose of the passport system is simply to pressure citizens into vaccine acceptance. The comments were recorded by Israeli's Channel 12 News in a candid conversation between Health Minister Nitzan Horowitz and Interior Minister Alit Shakta before a weekly meeting of the Israeli cabinet on September 12th. Horowitz and Shakhtar were unaware that the outlet was recording and broadcasting their discussion. The admission that vaccine acceptance is devolving into a propaganda push is not isolated to Israel. In the United States, leadership at a North Carolina hospital was exposed in a leaked Zoom call discussing ways to pad statistics in their official COVID-19 propaganda to include those who had recovered from the disease for the purpose of trying to invoke public fear and stimulate vaccine uptake. That's thanks to Patrick for that info. So Yeah, so there you go. So they are, it's propaganda. If you can't question what they're doing, it's propaganda. It's simple as that. Because the truth doesn't shy away from investigation. So you should be able to investigate it. Okay, just my week. I paid a visit to the Headford Arms Hotel in Kells for a coffee and a chat with a friend of mine. Well, that was the plan. So I got there early to check out what the policies were. Well, they had rules and regulations. They also needed to know my inside leg measurement. Well, that's what it felt like anyway, with all the questions they were going to ask me. So I left them and found an alternative coffee shop who didn't mind me getting my coffee without a mask, and we sat outside as the weather was okay. Yesterday, I actually went to a pub restaurant with a family, and they had a separate area for second-class citizens. It was undercover and a kind of indoors, and the weather was nice and warm anyway. Plus, they had a heater on the wall. So a family member gave his name. I think he was Elvis Presley. Maybe he'll confirm it. He's on the chat room at the moment. I don't know what name he used. I said Elvis Presley. And his number. Yes, it's uncanny that I have a member of my extended family called Elvis Presley. That's if it was Elvis Presley. I'm sure Liam will let me know. But I think the waiter wasn't happy with the fact that he had to put his name and number down. But it's all part of the policy. But there you go. So whatever name was put down anyway, that was the name that was on the list. And we just sat down. And that's all he wanted to know. A name and number. We sat down, had something to eat. And it was quite nice because we were the only ones there as a group. Everybody else was inside and we were kind of semi-outside. And the weather was nice, and it was okay, it's fine. And the food, as usual, was lovely. It was a nice place. So we just got on with it, you know, because one of the things I'll be talking to Rachel about in a minute will be, you know, it's gotten to the stage now that we know what's going on. I mean, a lot of people know what's going on. And you kind of say, okay, I'm getting fed up with this now. I'm just going to not play their game, but find ways around their game. That's really it, the fine game. So if one place wants too much information, go to another place and then obviously give them the business. So that's the kind of way around that I'm saying as well. Plus, does the alternative side to that. And the alternative side is this. In where I live locally, obviously, there's a few people know that I'm an IT guy or an ex-IT guy. And over the years, you know, I get the phone call or the text saying, look, my computer's not working. Do you mind coming down and, you know, doing the job on my computer? And that's, you know, not being a problem. But I know that, you know, some of these people now would be so kind of brainwashed listening to RTE and doing everything that RTE wants. And I got a text message in from one of these people there the other day. And they said, listen, I have no problem with my computer. Can you come down? Would you mind coming down and having a look? And I said, well, to be honest with you, I've kind of given up that until we get back to common sense and normality, because I refuse to go to a place where they require me to be jabbed or they want me to wear a mask. So unless, you know, you don't mind me wearing, not having a mask on and not being jabbed, I don't have a problem with it. But otherwise, you know, I won't be going. I'll be, you know, not doing any work like that. And they said, they texted back and said, okay, that's fine. But they didn't invite me down. So that means that they obviously were expecting me to go in either to be jabbed or to actually have a mask on. And I refused to do that. So there's the kind of the flip side to it. They have a computer. They're in trouble. They need help. And I don't know who else they'll call. I'm sure they'll probably find somebody. But normally they used to call me, because we're in a remote kind of country area and there's not many people out here that would do that. So hopefully they will find somebody, but I'm not prepared to go in and to put on a mask or to be jabbed so I can do little bits of work like that. I'm not interested. I'm not doing it. And so that's the kind of opposite effect of us being rejected because we don't have a vaccine passport. I'm now rejecting people who want me to wear a mask or be jabbed to go and do that kind of work. And I don't mind because there's other work on that I can be doing away from that where I don't need to have a mask and jab. So that's why I'm not too bothered about it. Okay, let's get my guest on. Rachel is the Global Training Director of Dr. Susan Jeffers, author of the best-selling book, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway, which I have a copy in my car and I am reading it at the moment after the last show that Rachel told me about the book. I've started to read it. Rachel pairs her qualifications in counselling psychology, consciousness psychology and cognitive behavioural therapy with her own life experience of waking up to empower others to do the same. With a private practice offering 121 coaching sessions, both online and face-to-face, Rachel thrives by educating others on how to wake up, freeing themselves from the limiting mindset they have been raised with. Her website is rachel-alexander.com. Good evening, Rachel. How are you?
Hi, Alan. I'm good. How are you?
Not too bad. Thanks a lot for coming on. I do really enjoy when we do a show because psychology is something that I've been involved in since 1986, and I'm just fascinated by it. And every time this is their third show, and I just love where we kind of bounce around ideas and with psychology and just put it out there and say to people, well, you know, what do you think of this? Or these are some of my objective, or I should say subjective understanding. Some is objective and some is subjective, because obviously some of it I haven't found any research on it, so I'd call it subjective. But good evening and thank you for coming on. How are you getting on? Before we get into all the madness, but how are you getting on with everything that's going on at the moment? I know you said before we went live that you're kind of, like me, you're kind of getting on now with things and you're not too looking at the COVID thing. You're just getting on with what needs to be done. So how are things going on your end?
Yeah, well, I think the UK is probably a lot different from the sounds of it to over where you are, because we've not gone as far as having to say that you've been jabbed. Obviously, I haven't been jabbed either. So they're not asking for proof of it when, you know, we're going into places yet, I say yet. So to be honest, it has felt over here that it has diluted a lot. I've noticed that a lot less people are wearing masks. You still get some people wearing masks in supermarkets, in cars, but obviously now you don't have to. So I'd say it's dropped by about 70% of the people that are wearing masks. So it's sort of like it feels as though it's dissipated a little bit for the moment over here. So yeah, things seem to be, you know, trickling along. Obviously, they're talking about vaccinating the children in the schools, but I've seen on Twitter tonight that it says a lot of head teachers are pulling back from that because they've got fears of you know, being taken to court and things. So I've just seen that on Twitter tonight. So yeah, I'm just sort of like keeping an eye on it, but from a distance.
Yeah, I think down to the laws of the country is going to be the game changer, because I know in Italy there was a statement saying something like from the 15th of October that in Italy you have to have it for your job. Now obviously I don't know what the laws are in Italy regarding people's rights. I mean, over here in Ireland we have a constitution, and for them to force people, I know Google tried to bypass their constitution, and I think they were told in no uncertain terms, no, you can't do that. So they said, right, okay, workers can work at home if you don't want to be jabbed. And I think a law has come out now over here in Ireland, or at least it's been mentioned that people can have a choice to work at home. Now, I don't know, that could be a good or bad thing, because outsourcing jobs and all of a sudden you realise that you're being let go or whatever, you know. So I don't know. I'm kind of sitting on the fence with that one. People are still wearing masks over here. Now, they're saying that on the 22nd of October over here in Ireland, we'll be near enough getting back to normal. But they still expect people to wear masks in retail. Although some retail shops are kind of like Aldi now are saying, there's a sign on the front saying, please respect people who are exempt from wearing a mask. And so Aldi are pretty much on the ball. Fair play to Aldi for doing that. There is another supermarket chain around the corner from Aldi. I won't mention the name. The manager of the shop, now he's a nice guy. You know, I've spoken to him on multiple occasions. He's a nice guy, but he feels that, you know, everybody should wear a mask regardless. So he's no concept of the law. His level of ignorance of the law, because you have to have an exemption in law for things, because people medically, some people can't wear a mask for medical reasons. But his idea is, oh, no, you should just wear a mask. But no, you don't understand. You can't do that. But again, they have signs in the supermarket discriminating, saying if you don't have a mask, you can't get in. So I'm just hoping down the line, and this has nothing got to do with him personally, but I'm hoping down the line that supermarket chain gets sued severely for doing that, and we'll learn the lesson to never, ever do that again. But how are you seeing it over there with the shops and stuff? Do you feel that, is there an easing off now and people are kind of not bothered anymore?
Yeah, same sort of thing. There's a lot of signs on doors saying we would prefer it if you wear a mask, but obviously they can't insist. So, yeah, I mean, you know, you still see people sat in cars on their own with a mask on and you're like, really? So you still obviously the level of fear in some people is still so high. I was talking to my accountant the other day. Unfortunately, she's awake to it all, very much like we are. And she was saying that they've now brought everybody back into the office, but some people are still quite fearful about it, including the her office manager. So, you know, these, she said there's still a lot of fear about in people. So I think that's just, you know, got to expect that, haven't we?
Has your law changed over there? I think it's not mandatory now or compulsory, that it's optional. I think that has your law changed over there?
Yeah, it is. It's optional now, so they can't insist that you have to wear a mask in a shop or a store or a bar or a restaurant. They can't insist now that you have to. So it's a lot better now. So now, if obviously I've not worn a mask from day one, so now you don't even get asked if you haven't got a mask on. So it's a lot better over here now.
Yeah, because over here we still have the law saying you have to wear a mask. But I mean, I've never worn a mask either. I've put on a face covering, and I wear it like a welder's mask in particular shops, because I know there's particular people, the old saying, don't cut your nose off to spite your face. At the end of the day, you might lose the battle, but you'll win the war. So sometimes you might go in, because I know of a lady who was very adamant that I'm not going to wear a mask. And she went into the shop and the owner of the shop actually kicked her out and said, I don't want you coming into the shop anymore. But that was the only shop in the local area where she could get her groceries. So now she, you know, can't go and get her groceries because she's not allowed in the shop. Now, I know it's all wrong, but this is what I'm saying. You have to kind of pick your battles, you know, because otherwise, you know, you're only making it worse for yourself. And I know we want to do the fight and do the right thing, but sometimes, as I say, you know, we might, you know, lose the battle, but we will win the war. And I think we just have to be careful with that. I'm kind of like you. We talked about it just before going live, that the energies, everything that's gone on, and thanks for reminding me, you mentioned about the full moon, I believe, that's going to be here. And we went through the Lionsgate. And a lot of people are saying and feeling that, you know, I don't want to be here. I don't want to do this. I don't want to deal with this. These energies that are coming in, it's affecting me, and it's just not a nice place to be with all these energies. So you kind of have a take on that, and you experienced that as well. So do you want to give us your experience with that?
Yeah, just sort of like over the last week, really. That, I mean, I don't know about you, but I feel the energies in my feet on a night in bed, literally. It's like my feet are buzzing, my ankles are buzzing. So I can feel that the energies have been really intense. So it got to a point yesterday, I was like, oh, I've had enough of this. So I rang a healing friend up of mine and said, who's massively into it, and I said, oh, you know, I'm going through a big, you know, shift, as in I'm raising my vibration, but I feel as though, what's the point? So when I get to the point of thinking, what's the point of being on this planet, that's when I know that I'm raising my vibration and going through a shift. But of course, as you're going through it, you sort of like forget that you're going through a shift, and you just think that that's how you feel. I can't be here, it's too heavy, it's too dense, it's too much cruelty, people are not loving each other, people are just zombies, you know, walking about, not really appreciating what the whole spiritual aspect of life is. So I'd gone to her, and she's an astrologer, and she was saying, look, you know, it's full moon in Pisces. In my chart in particular, there was a lot of really heavy energies about that was clearing to do with Pluto. So she said it's going to move off in 2 to 3 days. And I must admit, today I feel a lot better. So what I would say is, you know, if any of your listeners feel like that, go and see an astrologer, or I can share the astrologer that I see, and she can do it over Zoom, and just say, what's going on in my astrological chart at the moment to make me feel like this? And what she can tell you is, okay, for example, my birth Mars was was on my Pluto, apparently. It sounds very painful, but Mars was on my Pluto, which was basically saying, I'm not willing to live like this anymore. So you better sort it out, Mars, to help me, you know, shift to a higher vibration so that I can have more compassion and more understanding of the people who are living in fear on this planet. So, yeah, I would really recommend to check into the astrology and look at what is going on right now in my chart. Can you tell me why I feel like this? And more importantly, when will it pass? Because she has a magic book that she can look in and look at all like the transit and says, okay, well, it's going to move off in 2 days or 3 days. And even when my son was going through a really difficult time when he was 12 and he was going through this, I don't want to be here, what's the point? And she looked in this magic book and she said, he's having his spiritual awakening and he's going to be like it for 18 months. So basically batten down the hatches and just get through it as well as you can. And in 18 months, it will pass. And literally to the day, it passed 18 months later. And he was absolutely like, you know, like I would say 80% in a better place. So I hold so much, you know, faith in the astrology when I am feeling that I don't want to be here, that I really recommend that your listeners go and do that.
It's not something that I've had my chart read or anything, and I don't understand enough. And to me, I get confused. It confuses me because, you know, you see them on YouTube and they're saying, oh, well, the sun is in Mars. And I'm thinking, look, you're talking gibberish. Just, I don't care whether the sun's in Mars. Just tell me what you need to tell me. You know, maybe that's just my frustration part. And maybe I'm just saying, look, you know, you might as well be talking, some foreign language. Because I don't understand what you mean. Just tell me what you need to tell me so I can understand, you know, when it's going to stop or when it's going to start and what's happening. And I know they probably feel they have to justify it by saying, oh, well, the moon is in Mars or, you know, Saturn. But to me, you might as well be speaking a different language. So how would you sell that to me? Well, I'm not asking you to sell it to me, but, you know, is there a reason why am I being impatient and should I know that?
No, because I know exactly what you mean, because when she said to me yesterday, oh, my God, you've got Mars transiting Pluto sitting in whatever. Oh, my God, that's amazing. And I just looked at her and went, why? Because I feel like absolutely, you know, awful. So I think it's that thing. It's probably like us two. We're having this conversation. And if somebody isn't into psychology or spirituality or that they're awake, we would maybe say something like, well, it's just cognitive dissonance, isn't it? And to us, we've got this language that we know what we're talking about. But to anybody else that has never heard that before, they'll be like, yeah, and what does that mean? So I think when, you know, it's a good point when you do have an astrology reading, and every astrologer I've ever had always does it exactly like you've said, oh, Saturn's going to be moving through, you know, Mars and on, and it, oh dear, you're going to have a tough time. So what I just say at that point is, but what does that mean to me on a day-to-day basis? And what it sort of like does is, it with my astrologers, is it tips them into going, oh, well, what it means is da-da-da-da-da and da-da-da-da-da. So I think it's just that thing where they're so knowledgeable about the subject that they probably forget that we're not. So you've just got to say, well, that's great, but what does that mean to me here and now? And, you know, why am I feeling like this? And what will it happen when that moves on? So, because I'm the same. I do agree with you totally, Alan. It can be really frustrating.
Well, I'll tell you why, because I'll be, so you book an hour with an astrologer, right, and you say, okay, they're going to give you a reading, and 30 minutes of that is them telling me the moon is in Mars, and I'm thinking, look, you've just wasted 30 minutes telling me stuff that doesn't mean nothing to me, and I would have preferred if you gave me that other 30 minutes of stuff that you could tell me, and don't worry whether the moon's in Mars, I'm sure it is, and I'll believe you, but just tell me, what does that mean? Because you book an hour and you only get 30 minutes of information because they're too busy telling us all about whether the moon's in Mars or not.
Well, what might be an idea is to get one of my astrologers, there's two astrologers that I see, maybe get them on your show, and then you can say to them, why do you do that? I mean, to be fair, the astrologers that I see, they don't do that. They will give me a reading from the moment they start. They are giving me information, but they do, you know, start whatever they're going to tell me. They say, well, what it is, you know, the so-and-so planet's moving to so-and-so. So they don't spend 30 minutes telling me all that. They will say what that means is, but you've just got to prompt them. But they'd probably make quite an interesting guess for you, because you could, you know, ask them questions. Well, why would you do that? Why, you know, and they'll talk to you about why they do, but also give you the benefits of why having a reading is so useful if you're on the spiritual path. Because my, so what my astrologer does that's really interesting is, and a lot of astrologers do this, Alan, is they do two charts. So they do the natal chart, which is telling you what's going on for you right now or what's going to be coming in the future on a very sort of like human level. But then they can also give you your soul chart, and they can tell you why you've come here as a soul and what it is that you've come here to learn and what the challenges are that you've come here to learn and what your soul wound is. So what your main theme is that you've come here to try and heal in this particular incarnation. So that's really interesting when you get into the soul chart.
Okay, that's something we'll have to sort out, Rachel. I think if I have a one-to-one reading and then they come on the show, then remember I said about before we went live, I said about people saying that, well, you know, I can do X amount, and I go, okay, well, do a reading for me and then come on the show and then we'll talk about it. So maybe that's definitely something that we could arrange, we can sort out. That would be pretty good, because obviously that information is interesting. But here's the, I'm going to throw a spanner in the works, and this is not about you, but about the astrology. There is this rumor or this thing going around that there's actually 13 signs and not 12. That means that technically I'm not the sign I'm supposed to be. That kind of shifts everything. So are they buying into the whole 13 sign thing, or does that challenge their belief system and it will rock their boat, so they're kind of ignoring the 13 sign and just sticking with the 12?
Yeah, I've never heard that there's 13 signs, and I've never heard them talk about that there's 13 signs. But I know one of the astrologers, she's been doing it for about 30 years, and she is aware of things like that, where they say, oh, they're going to change the names of the star signs. And she'll be like, oh, yeah, of course they will. Yeah, because it's only been in history for how many years? So, again, it'd be a really good question to ask them.
Okay, that's going to be interesting. Okay, let's get into some psychology. That's what we're here to talk about. Now, this is going to be, for people who don't know about this, this is all kind of subjective rather than objective stuff. And myself and Rachel are just going to be throwing around a few ideas, okay? So don't take this for gospel, because I have no solid information on this. But when Rachel came on the show the last time, I had a theory about the whole idea of respect for each other. And so we know in psychology there's four different zones. OK, so you have your public zone, your social zone, you have your friendship zone and your personal zone. So we know there's four zones. And depending on how well you know somebody will depend on whether you can get near the zone. And I'm sure you've been in a situation where somebody has probably got too close to you and you felt a little bit uncomfortable because they haven't been accepted into your zone. You didn't accept them into your closer zone. And that's how you know. So basically, I took the idea of the four zones and I said, right, okay, what is the situation about respect for each other? Do you have more respect for your partner or your wife or your husband than you'd have more respect for a neighbour or a friend or a member of the public? And if you get asked to do a job or somebody asks you to do something, will you do it quicker for your partner, for your husband, for your wife, than if it was your friend or if it was a social, maybe a neighbour or something? So, and this is my theory. Now, I've no research with this at all, but I just have this theory based on just life experiences that when you contact somebody, you know, I'm sure everybody listening to this show have gone and asked either a family member, a friend, a partner, or somebody to do them a favour. Can you do me a favour and can you do this for me? And they've either done it pretty much straight away or in the first few hours, or just people that will say, can you do that for me? And just two or three weeks have gone by and they still haven't done it, right? Now, when people say, oh, well, I'm very busy. Well, we're all very busy. And it goes back to the argument that I had with that electrician. I said that on the show, I think, last week, where he said, I'll be coming to your house about 6:30, either Wednesday, Thursday or Friday to do a price up a job. And then I was there waiting for him at 6:30 and he didn't turn up. And Saturday morning he said, oh, well, I was very busy. And I said, are you telling me that your time's more important than mine? I said, is that what you're saying? That your time is more important than my time? So we got the arse because I pointed out something that people don't like pointing out. And needless to say, I didn't give him the job. And this is what annoys me. We're all busy, but we all have to respect each other's time, because in time banking, an hour is an hour is an hour, regardless. So myself and Rach had a quick chat before about this. And so, Rachel, I know I'm putting you on the spot because we really haven't got into this. So just go with the flow and tell me what your feeling would be based on your life experiences with respect and people doing work for you, and what you kind of expect from your upbringing from others.
Good question. I think one of the pitfalls that I've had to learn is just because I would be a certain way with somebody doesn't necessarily mean that they will be that way back. So say, for example, if I thought, let me give an example. I don't know. Say like I'm arranging to meet a friend for coffee and I just think, oh, well, I'll get this. You get it the next time. You know, be that first one to just say, look, I'll sort these coffees out. You get it the next time. But then you would meet next time and then obviously you're thinking, oh, well, you getting it this time because I got it last time. And then they wouldn't, for example. I'd be quite surprised by that. I'd be like, oh, well, I thought that's what you just do. You just sort of like, you know, alternate it. Type thing. So I think sometimes when we make expectations of what another person would be like based on our own upbringing, kindness, generosity, respect, and then we don't get it, then we can be really surprised, can't we? We can think, that's a bit strange. But actually, that was only our expectation, and we probably had no right to put that expectation out there. So probably like your example, the electrician, if you said 6:30, you would rock up at 6:30. So then when somebody doesn't, you're like, why would they do that? And again, I do think this goes back to a spiritual level, that if you've got that intention of kindness, respect, you know, being polite, that's the adult that you were talking about before, and the higher wisdom, isn't it? That's sort of like the respect.
Yeah.
And if you don't then get that back, you're disappointed. But then really, have we got any right to be disappointed? Because should we have checked it out beforehand? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, totally. Because, you know, we have our certain expectations, the way we were brought up and what we'd expect from people. And maybe they had a different upbringing and they don't see that as a major issue. More maybe, you know, for me, I have a corporate background. So I am very kind of a lot of the time on the ball all the time, trying to get things done, trying to be organized. And so something I said to you before we went live is that when you send something to somebody in the post, it's nice to get an email back just to say, yeah, I received it. Great, thanks. You know, that's all, just to say that they received it, because sometimes when you send stuff, you don't know whether the post has actually, they've got it or not. And a little email back to say, yeah, thanks, I received it. You know, it's them little things, because again, we talk about, you know, before we've talked about energy, the givers and takers, the adult mind, the child mind. And givers use energy. They don't have a problem with that. And the takers don't like using energy. And even thinking, I mean, we mentioned as well, see, myself and Rachel had a bit of a chat before we went live and we were talking about this. And I didn't want to get into interview mode, but because the subject is quite fascinating for me, we got into it. So we were saying we can't believe that people in the history of Ireland and the government of Ireland and the UK as well, you know, we had thalidomide in the 60s and asbestos and the cervical cancer issue. And then we have HPV and the abuse in the church. So we know the governments, the politicians shouldn't be trusted, right? You don't trust your government because they lie and they always lie, right? They feather their own nest. They're only interested in their feathering their own nest, taking care of themselves, and they lie to get in, to get a vote and everything else. So most people know that. Fundamentally, they know that. But yet, when it came to this COVID thing with the jab, they're hearing the politicians, what they're saying, and actually believing it. And you think, what part in your life do you not get the point that you don't trust your government because they constantly lie? And it's just amazing. Now, one of the things I posted up on Facebook a while ago was that people have outsourced their thinking to the government because, oh, well, I can't be bothered. Oh, there's too much hassle. Or they'll use the BBC or the RTE as their point of reference and their research, thinking, no, no, no. You know, the BBC actually covered up Jimmy Savile for years. You're going to trust them. So, excuse me. So, the idea of energy flow for me, it's not the big stuff; it's the little stuff. And to think, you know, again, it goes back to Dale Carnegie when you read the book How to Win Friends and Influence People. He says instead of doing the reaction, which is a lot of people, what did they react? So there's no filtering system. They just react and they don't think about what they're going to say before they say it. And a lot of the time that tends to be a negative, and that negative then causes an argument. Would you agree with that, Rachel?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, we're reacting from the unconscious within us, aren't we? We're reacting from that programming that you and I talk about a lot. So if we react without taking a step back and thinking about it, then it's our old wounds that are being triggered and that are then going to go into defense mode, and then that triggers the other person's unconscious triggers, and then so they react, and then you're both in that child mode, aren't you? Just you know, attacking. So yeah, I totally agree with that, and that's why being spiritual is so great, isn't it? And I think that's why so many spiritual people have seen through the whole COVID malarkey, because they're able to just take a step back, reflect, critically think, analyze, and think, no, this isn't right. You know, I recruit Feel the Fear instructors, as you know, and every single one that I speak to over the last 18 months when I've been recruiting them have been awake to all this, because they're aware of that process. They're aware of when their fear has taken over them. And so they're able to take a step back and say, right, I've been triggered. Why have I been triggered? What is it that's going on for me? This is my child self that's been triggered. My adult self has disappeared. Therefore, let me get some equilibrium back and act out of my adult mode. So, yeah, I totally agree with what you've just said.
Exactly. And especially if you have a victim mentality, or you're obviously on the defense. And so it's to get in the jab first, or to say something quick, because you're defending yourself because you feel you're being you're a victim. And this is something that I'm aware of. Now, in the corporate world, obviously, you can't turn around and start calling your staff names, because you'd get pulled up in front of HR. So I was familiar with that process through Dale Carnegie reading his book, saying, you know, think about what you're going to say before you say it, you know, because obviously chances are whatever you say and you're reacting to is going to be a negative, and it's only going to cause more problems. And this is why it's important. Again, we go back to givers and takers, the adult mind and the child mind. And we were, again, talking before we went live, and I don't want to break it down and say it's that simple, because it's not. It's very convoluted and there's more involved. But what I try and look at is when I see a person or I'm speaking to a person, I will try and gauge, are they a giver? Are they a taker? Do they have an adult mind, or do they have a child mind? And based on, what they do, because it's not what they say, it's what they do, it's their actions. It's for me, it's important anyway. Will tell me what way they are, and obviously what way their mind works, because again, the fluid belief system, which I mentioned before, is if you give them a subject that's really out there, you know, do you believe the world's been controlled by a group of men? They'll answer it in two ways, and then that answer will tell you whether they're confident with their intellect, because a weakness to some people is something that you don't want to show, so they'll poo-poo it rather than say, I don't know. And the adult mind will turn around and say, I don't know. You'll find a lot of people with the adult mind will say, I don't know, you know. But child mind is more got to do with covering things up. And it is amazing when you get into the subject. So going back to the whole respect idea, and I talk about the four zones. So I know that we're a certain way, and we expect people to react, and maybe that's something that myself and you, Rachel, have to deal with, you know, that it's us maybe expecting too much from people. But at the same time, isn't it just right to be respectful to people? You know, especially if you're doing somebody a favor. You know, when you're doing somebody a favor, and this is the gas thing, there's one thing when you want somebody to do something for you. Okay, I get that. But when you're going to be doing them a favor and they kind of muck you about, and you think, hang on a minute, I'm doing you a favor, why are you mucking me about? That happens as well. What's your kind of psychology in that?
I think I apply a spiritual perspective to that, which would be, what is the lesson here that I'm supposed to be learning? So is it about boundaries? Is it about letting go of this person? Is it about self-worth, that I don't need to put up with that type of behaviour? So I'm quite a big one of, I'll give somebody one chance, two chance, three chances. But if then their behaviour is still disrespectful, I have this sort of like mechanism where I just go, right, I'm done, and that's it, you're out of my life. But I think that's took me a lot of years to get to that point, because of course you sort of like brought up with the idea that, you know, your long-term friends are, you know, friends that you should keep hold of, your school friends are friends that you should keep hold of, or family are people that you should keep hold of. And I think it is exactly, I think your electrician example is a really good point. It's like, you're not showing me respect, and therefore I won't be showing myself respect if I accept this behaviour from you. And, you know, I've been single. I got divorced about 14 years ago. I've been single on and off ever since. And part of the reason is because, you know, I'm like, you're not showing me enough respect. You're not prioritising me enough in this relationship. And I'm not needy. I'm not demanding. I'm not obsessive. I'm a really chilled woman. But it's like, no, you're not showing me respect. So therefore, this relationship has to end. So I tend to see situations like that as, this is a karmic lesson that is trying to teach me about self-worth, self-love, self-respect. So, you know, instead of sort of like getting annoyed about it, look underneath it and see, is it time for me to step away from this person who clearly hasn't got the same level of respect for me that I have been showing them?
Yeah, I agree. And also, sometimes these people will say, his opinion of me calling him out for being kind of disrespectful and at least not ringing me to tell me that, you know, he's not going to be there, they'll go, oh yeah, that person, they're a difficult person. You know, you think, no, I'm not being difficult. You're the one that started this. You're the problem. You're disrespectful. And because I called you out on it, you're saying I'm a difficult person. And you think, no, I'm not a difficult person. I just want the same respect that I'm giving you that you give me.
Absolutely, exactly. And I think the challenge is, I had a really good example the other day, which I won't really break that much confidence, but it was about a therapist, and a client had called her out on her actions, and I actually agreed with the client. So the therapist is telling me, trying to say, you know, isn't it awful that this client put this in the message and said this to me and then said that to me? And I was like, no, actually, she had a right. So I'm like you. It's like, no, she's called you out and she's triggered you. And what you need to do is look at, what part of that, of your behavior, do you need to earn? And, you know, and then earn it. So one of the things, for example, was the client had said that she should have had two clocks in the rooms. Well, yeah, as a therapist, you do. I do. One clock that I can see and one clock that the client can see. And so I said, you know, maybe you do need to have two clocks in the room. So maybe it's about looking at the points that she's raised have actually been very good points, because I'm not emotionally involved in the situation. Obviously, you've been triggered, you're hurt, you know, you've reacted and you want to now, you know, not have anything to do with that client. But actually, she's got really good points. So, you know, push your ego to a side. And, you know, I know it's not very nice, but earn what you need to earn, and then you'll get your self-confidence, because you've accepted that sometimes you get it wrong, and we all get things wrong sometimes. But if we can learn from it and earn it, then we're not bothered about people calling us out, because we go, do you know what, you're right, yeah, what a great learning experience I've had. So I think it's that thing that a lot of people don't like being called out, do they, like you've said, and that goes back to the child mind, because they feel vulnerable, they feel not good enough, they feel insecure. And so once they are called out, it triggers their shame, and they'll either get on the path and start healing that, or they won't. And that's why I step away from people that don't want to heal that shamed child within, and they just want to react from the unconscious processes day in, day out. And it's like, well, that's fine, you behave like that, but I want to hang out with more enlightened people that want to, you know, become self-aware. I go walking 3 times a week. I think I've mentioned it before. We started it in COVID, me and my friend, and we've carried it on. And we have such amazing conversations when we talk, because we talk about if we've been triggered and what the lesson is in it, and why did it trigger me, and what am I here, what am I supposed to be learning from it, and why did it upset me, and what do I need to earn? And we call them sort of like, you know, the ascension walks, because by the end of them, we've both come away with more awareness of our child, of our shadow side, of the parts of us that need self-love, you know, self-respect. And that's what you need. You need to find people in life where you can hold the mirror up to each other and say, can I just talk this through? You know, my ex-husband did this, my ex-husband said this, or my boyfriend said this. What is it in me that's been triggered? Why am I behaving like this? Because I need to heal that part of me, because that's what the spiritual journey is, isn't it? It's healing that wounded child within you to be able to get more confident and more self-respecting.
Yeah, basically what you said there, bang on with the shadow side, because we're in these energies now where it's the death of the ego and people don't want to deal with it. So they don't want to deal with the shadow side, so they're externalizing, and that's why a lot of people are probably on the attack or very volatile at the moment with what's going on. And we have to look, I suppose, at ourselves. And I love being in a situation when I'm in, I've been in groups where everybody's open-minded and everybody can express their opinion, and we all go, oh, that's interesting information, you know, I wasn't aware of that, you know, and there's nobody coming in with, you know, well, my information's better than your information, none of that at all, just open-minded. But I have come across, and this is just, again, my subjective approach to this, Rachel, you know what I'm like, I analyse things and look at them. And I do feel that there's two kinds of people out there. You have your opinionated people and then you have your people with an opinion. And I just break it down to this, that the opinionated people are the people that you cannot change their belief system. Even though they're in the spiritual way community, they have their opinion and da 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 da. And you think, well, what about X, Y, and Z? Oh, no. And they won't kind of go from that. Now, I don't know whether, because sometimes there might be an investment in the information they have, and they spent a lot of time in that investment, so they don't want to kind of challenge it. That's what you believe. And I find I have come across people like that, and I don't really get into a conversation with them because there's no point, because I feel they're opinionated and whatever I say ain't going to make any difference. And that's in the woke community, you know. And then there's people that will have an opinion, and that's when you can have that kind of ping pong. The conversational ping pong is what I call it, you know, to me, to you. And when you have somebody like that and you can swap opinions and swap ideas, then that's the way it should be. And I think, you know, in life, that's what I call a conversational ping pong. That's the way it should be. That's how it should work. And you get so much information, and there's that exchange of energy and knowledge and everything else, and we all learn from it, and that's what we need to work at. But I try and avoid the opinionated people, and I just kind of work with hopefully people that will just have an opinion. I don't know, I mean, have you come across that?
Yeah, totally. And I think, funny enough, I was having this conversation yesterday with my healer friend about, I think it surprises me how many people in the spiritual community who say they are spiritual actually are like that they don't like to examine their belief system, they don't like to look at their shadow side, they don't like to look at their unprocessed, the unconscious. It's you know, they don't like to do it. And I think the term for it is spiritual bypassing, I think I've got the right term there. So they may be, you know, they may be a very good astrologer, or they may be a very good psychic, or they may be a very good healer, but they're not doing the inner work, the real work, as I call it. So I think you've got to be really careful. I've had a few sort of like nasty nips by thinking that people in the spiritual community were like me. I have my opinions, but I'll be open to other people's opinions. I might not agree with them, but, you know, let them have them, of course. And I've just assumed that other people in the spiritual community were like that. In fact, even when I did my master's in, it was in spirituality, consciousness and transpersonal psychology, I just wrongly assumed that every other delegate on that master's course would be the same as me, examine my unconscious, you know, look at my belief systems. And actually, I did a group work, one of the first modules we had to do a group work, and I couldn't believe how unself-aware these other people were in the group, so much so that I actually had to have supervision by my tutor for it, because it had absolutely floored me. I was like, hang on a minute, I'm on a master's course with people doing a spirituality and consciousness, you know, course for 2 years, and they don't understand about the shadow side, the unconscious, examining your belief systems. And the tutor was Like, yeah, well, there are people like that in the spiritual world. And it was a real reality slap for me. I was really upset. You know what I mean? I was like, hang on a minute. Why are they like that? So, yeah, I think it's just that brilliant word. One of my favorite words is discernment. You know, just being able to take a step back and assess it all and not make the assumption that everybody is like us and raised like we were or are into the same sort of thinking or methodology or spiritual, you know, processing that we are, because we can get nasty nips sometimes.
Well, were they trying to be, or were they, because they had that lack of understanding on the spiritual side, were they trying to be more clinical or scientific and have that approach to it rather than being more open-minded to the spiritual side?
Well, it was interesting because it was more like at the time I was going through a really difficult time, so I couldn't get with my son. So I couldn't, they wanted to spend hours on this presentation. And I was like saying, look, you know, I can't do that. But they both had perfectionist, you know, what's the word, drivers going on that it had to be, we had to spend all day on a Saturday putting this PowerPoint together. And I'm like saying, I can't do it. I can do 2 hours and that's it. But then I was getting, you know, judged the fact that I could only do 2 hours. So I was trying to say, what's going on for you guys? The fact that you think you have to spend all day on this PowerPoint presentation, you know, I think there's something about perfectionist going on here. And they were just like, what do you mean? What are you talking about? And so it's just that complete lack of self-awareness at looking at the behavior and why they were behaving in the way that they were behaving.
Right. Okay. Exactly. I suppose so you have to be able to analyze yourself. And as you say, any triggers or anything like that of that self-analyzing. And when you do you've done all these courses, surely with the information that you came across, you start self-analyzing yourself. And when you learn something and you went, wow, that's interesting, I must look at myself, you know, regarding that subject matter or the way the mind works, because I have to question how I think and how I work and how I react or act. I suppose it's a bit like medical students finding out about certain things medically, and some medical students drop out because they realize that, you know, it's not for them because of, you know, all the things you could probably get or things that could happen to you. And I'm not saying that's the case with psychology, but I'm sure you've probably come across information as part of your training and you went, wow, I didn't know that. I didn't know human beings or human nature, or I need to analyze my mind and how the mind works. Has that happened to you?
Oh God, absolutely. Like, I mean, I've 2004 I did my first psychology degree, but this process of self-awareness is addictive, isn't it? Because if you can, what I'm trying to get to in this incarnation is inner peace. That's where I'm trying to get to, where my mind doesn't have any form of worry. So basically whatever happens to me, I'm trying to get to the point where nothing externally can basically trigger an internal negative response. So whatever happens, I want to just be able to go, do you know what, I'll handle it, and I'm not laid in bed worried about it. You know, I'm not sat talking about it to my friend for, you know, 2 hours at a time. So that to me is my true success. If I can get to that place where nothing can trigger me and nothing can upset my happy mood, if you like, then that to me is a success. Not the size of the house I live in, not the car that I drive, the fact that I can live each day in joy. That's where I'm trying to get to on my own personal journey. So if, say for example, the other night I'd woken up early, let's just say I had a meeting with my accountant that didn't go well on Friday. So Friday night, in the sense of how much she was telling me that I had to pay in tax, not because I'd earned so much, obviously, because of COVID, but because I'd been inadvertently using money from the company which wasn't there, which I didn't even know I could do. And I'm still to this day thinking, wow, that's really clever that I can do that. Anyway, it meant that I've got a big tax bill to pay, and I don't know how I'm going to pay it, basically. There I am Friday night in bed, you know, wake up 1 o'clock in the morning, thinking about it, you know, worrying about it. How am I going to pay that? But I'm aware that I've gone into fear. So this is how my mind operates. I'm laid there at 1 o'clock in the morning. I go, right, I've gone into fear, and I don't want to be ruled by fear. So what is it that I'm actually fearful about? What is it that I think I'm going to happen? And then what came into my head, I meditated a little bit, and what came into my head was some cards, some like oracle cards that I've had for years. And they're by a lady called Caroline Miss, MYSS. And your listeners should check her out, CarolineMissMYSS.com. And what she does is she's done a lot of Jungian work based on the archetypes, all the different archetypes that we can be. So we can be a wounded child, a magical child. We can be a lover. We can be a damsel in distress. We can be an emperor. So all these archetypes, we can embody these archetypes. And so what Spirit told me was that I was embodying the archetype of the bully. So I'm lying in bed at 1 o'clock in the morning thinking, I'm not a bully. I don't bully people. I'm such an, you know, nice person. And what Spirit said to me was, no, you have an inner bully. You've developed an inner bully from a very young age because you were scared. So what this inner bully is doing is trying to protect you all the time by putting you in fear to therefore try to get you to do something to sort out the situation. And that's probably why I'm a psychologist, because I'm a fixer, I'm a rescuer. If I can help, I will do. I want to make you better. So that was, so I woke up in the morning with this awareness that, right, so it's my own inner bully that's causing me this, you know, lack of ability to sleep, this like constant overthinking of how I can get out of it. So that's why it's so good to be able to take a step back and self-reflect. And what I'd say to listeners is, as I did last time, about feel the fear. You know, if you read that book and you get an understanding of where are my fears driving my behavior, once you learn to let go of those fears, then that's when the vibration of love can take over, because the fear, the vibration of fear, is blocking the vibration of unconditional love for yourself. So for me, the spiritual journey is purely about letting go of the vibration of love that is with, letting go of the vibration of fear that is within you from your conditioned self and from your past. So that's the biggest trick I can share with your listeners. Just all the time look at, where is my fear? What is it saying to me? What is it trying to protect me? And how is fear an illusion? Because of course, fear is an illusion.
Well, I kind of have a take on that, and I'll get your opinion on it. Now, I could totally agree with you. You have to stay out of fear. The highest energy is love, and you try and focus on your life and try and stay out of fear as much as you can. Stay away from the people that pull your energy down, energy vampires and all that jazz. People know that. Okay. So we take that for granted. The listeners on the show, anyway, they're aware of that. Now, one thing that you said there, this shift of energy that's going on where people are saying, you know, I don't want to be here. It's just these energies are too much, you know, I just want to move on, get to 5D, wherever people want to go. Now, this is not a kind of materialistic thing where people are saying, well, if I had more money, a bigger house, a bigger car and all that, my life would be better. It's not. It's irrelevant. The materialistic side of the 3D, it's nothing got to do with that. This is a kind of an energy, a feeling of what's going on. So for me anyway, it's nothing got to do with materialism at all. It doesn't matter whether I had a mansion, I'd still feel the same way. So it's irrelevant. I know it's a feeling, it's an energy, and I can feel it. Where we, you know, it comes and goes, because that's what happens, you know, with the energy that comes in, the human frequency is off the charts. But it's interesting that you say a couple of things there I just want to pick up on. I'm just looking at my notes here. One of the things that, again, the self-analyzing, and I've talked about the fluid belief system, is the whole idea of the path of knowledge. You know, I accept the fact that I don't know everything. I just know what I know today. And tomorrow I might learn something new, which might contradict what I know today. I might come across somebody who might be further down the path, who might know the information I don't know. So what I have to be aware of is to put that on the fence, or ask them, say, well, that's great information. Can you give me a pointer or some information or evidence, and I'll have a look at that. So if I keep an open mind like that, then for me, that kind of keeps things balanced. And of course, it keeps balanced with the people who I'm learning from. And obviously, people hopefully will learn from me in the same way. But I can understand why people always say, the more you understand humans, the more you want to be with animals.
Yeah.
It makes sense with the energy of animals compared to, because they're more straightforward. But yeah, I mean, the whole idea of self-analyzing, you know, I think the important part of the self-analyzing is to accept the fact to be able to do it and want to do it to improve you, because there are people in life that don't want to do anything. They're happy with their life. They're happy with their bit. They'll sit down, they'll watch the soaps and they'll go to work and they'll have their dinner and that's it. That's their life. And maybe sometimes because, like, I'm hungry for information. I love knowledge. I love learning. I love speaking to people that I can learn from. And I hope to carry on doing that until I pass over. But I have to also realize that there are other people, maybe in my life, that aren't into any of that at all. They just want to keep it very simplistic. I work, I have something to eat, I watch my TV, and I'm grand, I'm happy. I'm not really interested in hobbies or, you know, learning things about the world or what's going on. Actually, cognitive dissonance really applies, because the more I understand how bad the world is, the more it'll affect me. So I don't really want to know. So that's where the cognitive dissonance kicks in with them. Maybe this is why we're in this kind of duality, and maybe this divide is happening on the planet now. We're seeing it because, especially with relationships, because, you know, so many people now are going their own separate ways, because when you step outside the matrix and your partner, your wife, husband or friends are not inside the matrix, you do become different people completely. The things that you are interested in, you're no longer interested in. And that divide happens. Now, it might take a period of time, but I also am aware, and maybe I'm sure you've come across this, Rachel, that, you know, the relationship, say it's in a relationship, whether it's a friendship or whether it's definitely a relationship between a husband and wife, whatever, the relationship can be dead, even though the relationship is still there.
Oh, 100%, 100%.
So on a spiritual level, the relationship is gone. But on a physical level, it's still there, because I know they did a survey in the UK a few years ago, and they stopped, they interviewed 100 men and 100 women, and they said, are you happy in your relationship? 50% of women said no, 52% of men said no. And they said, well, you know, why are you in it? And they said, well, they gave all the reasons. I have children. I can't afford it financially to go my own separate way. It's better than being single. And they gave about five different reasons, all the main reasons that they normally give. And so that means if you look at them statistics, half the population are unhappy in a relationship. But nothing's going to be done about it, because, and I can understand why. I mean, there's valid reasons there. I can understand why some people can't, you know, because there's certain reasons why they can't do it. And they're the valid reasons. And I do hear an awful lot of these. I do hear psychologists turning around and saying, or people, I won't say psychologists, because they are these people that are kind of dear Deirdre, you know, or you get them on GMTV and all, and they go, well, you're in a sad relationship or unhappy relationship, you should just leave. And you think, it's not that simple, love. You have to look at the relationship and what's going on, the dynamics, and there could be contributing factors why you can't leave, because, as I say, financial reasons, could be health reasons, or could be something else. But it's interesting that about this divide that is taking place anyway with people, as people, you know, just the matrix, and people who are in the matrix and outside the matrix. And if anything, COVID has enhanced that, or actually sped it up with people taking different sides.
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of the work that I do with one-to-one clients is actually people who want to get divorced. I suppose you would call me a divorce coach, in one sense, with a certain group of clients that I work with. And yeah, you're absolutely right. They'll say, oh, I don't want to upset my kids, or oh, my parents will be upset. So I have like 50-year-old men saying to me, oh, it would devastate my parents if I got divorced again. And, you know, and I don't want to lose my pension. I don't want to lose my house, you know. And it just absolutely flabbergasts me. And then I remember that I used to be that person. I was that person in an unhappy marriage before I was more enlightened. And I think part of the problem why we stay in unhappy relationships is because we probably had unhappy relationships modeled to us by our parents. So when we were younger, we probably did hear the parents arguing about money, but then the next day acting as though nothing was wrong. We probably did have parents that weren't very touchy-feely with each other, so we just thought that was the norm. We probably did have parents that would snipe at each other and get, you know, resentful with each other and bitter with each other and argue. And so I think part of the problem is we just think that that is marriage. So I had a client that I was working with, and I was trying to get him to look at his relationship with his wife, whether it was loving behaviour or unloving behaviour that she was displaying to him. So he gave me this example that they'd been to this shop, and he pointed out the price to her of something because he thought she was looking for the price of this item. So he said, oh, it's, you know, $4.99. So she'd snapped at him and said, I wasn't even looking for the price. Now, to me, that's not love, because, okay, we can all be in a bad mood and we can all snap at somebody. But then once we've sort of like realised we've done it, we can all say, oh, I'm sorry. My head's not there. Sorry, I shouldn't have spoken to you like that. But with this guy, it was a regular pattern of behaviour that she was, you know, the put downs, the sniping, the bad mood. He was walking on eggshells. And so I said to him, but have you worked out that that is unloving behaviour? And he said to me, but no, because she tells me that she loves me. Before we go to bed in the night, she'll say, okay, I love you. And I said, I don't care what she says to you, but have you worked out that that is unloving behaviour? It's a pattern of unloving behaviour. And he hadn't. And I said, do you actually know what loving behaviour looks like? Well, he'd been in a disrespectful relationship the first time round. He'd not had a very good relationship with his parents. So he had no blueprint, Alan, of what loving, respectful behaviour was from somebody. And so I think as well as all the fears of my kids will be upset, my parents will be upset, which at the end of the day is, well, deal with it. They'll handle it. Your kids will handle it. Your parents will handle it. You've got a right to be happy. I think underlying this population is this sort of like blueprint of unloving relationships. Whereas probably the likes of you and me are like, I only want to be in a relationship with somebody that meant, this is my checklist. We've got to mentally connect with each other. So we've got to be able to have conversations that absolutely, you know, float our boats, and we can debate things and we can discuss things and we can say, oh, I didn't think about that. Yeah, you've got a point there. Or no, I don't agree with you. And this is why. So mentally, I've got to be stimulated. Emotionally, you've got to understand me emotionally. So if I'm crying, I want you to be able to go, right, what's going on for you? Come on, let me give you a hug. Let me, you know, sit down. Let me go get you a cup of chamomile tea, you know, and I've got to be able to do the same for that other person. Physically, I've got to be attracted to them. And sexually, I've got to be attracted to them. So that's my, if you like, I see it as like a table. They're my four corner legs. And if I don't have any, if one of those is missing, then I'm not interested. It's got to be all four. So I think when you look at most relationships, a lot of people are not mentally at the same vibration. Emotionally, they're not. Physically, they haven't. I know people that haven't had sex in their marriages for about 10 years. Now, to me, sex is one of life's great free pleasures. And I get, if both partners don't want to have sex, then great. Both people are happy. But I know relationships where either the wife wants to have sex and the man doesn't, or the man wants to have sex and the wife doesn't. It's like, well, have a conversation about it and sort it out. And then, of course, that's where affairs start, isn't it? Because the man or the woman's getting the needs met elsewhere. So I think it's twofold. I think there's so much fear about my kids, my parents, the money. But I think there's also this lack of loving relationships, role models. So we don't know what to expect in a relationship.
You know, when I have you on, Rachel, you're the only one that I furiously am writing all the time as you're talking, because there's so many things we can talk about. I totally agree. And I will say, now that I've reached, because people hear my voice and they normally, if they don't know what I look like, they go, oh, you sound probably in your 30s or 40s. And I'm not, I'm mid 50s. I think at my age, I know you're younger. At my age now, it would be, if I was a single guy, my first priority would be the mind, you know, because we all get older, right? And we have, we don't look like what we used to look like when we were 25, all right? So our bodies change. So for me, and okay, I agree that there has to be a certain level of attraction at the start. I mean, that's obvious. There has to be a little bit. But, you know, you could sit down and you could sit down with a woman who's very attractive. And as soon as she opens her mouth, you think, no, I don't want to be here. You know, mm-hmm. You get it. So for me, I mean, if you can combine the physical with the intellectual, boy, that's just explosive. Mm-hmm. But I think as you get older, because, as I say, our bodies change and, you know, different needs, and we have to be more patient as we get older. I think the intellectual side has to win, because if you're in your 80s, obviously you won't be doing anything, maybe not too physical, I wouldn't say in your 80s. So you have to still have that connection. And I'd like to think, you know, and I don't think I've used this example, but I'm going to give you an example, a true example of what I was told by someone. I won't say who told me the story, okay, but here's the story, and I think it just sums up so much. So anyway, this chap is in his job, and he's with his mates, and he's feeling a bit down. You know, so he rings his wife and he says, look, I'm coming home a little bit early. I'm just not feeling well. I'm not feeling well. I'm feeling a bit down. He wasn't sick. He was just feeling a bit down. So he said, I'm going to leave early and just come home, you know. And his wife said, oh, that's okay. So anyway, he goes home and he opens up the door, goes in, and his wife is there and she's naked on the stairs, right? And she says, I want you to take me now, right? Well, when I tell people this story, the first thing they think about is, oh, the sex thing. And they don't analyse everything else that's around that. So for a minute, just put away the whole idea of the sex thing, right? Think about it. So this couple, middle-aged, and obviously when you're older and your body changes, you get very kind of, a lot of people lack confidence because, as I said, you don't have the body that you used to have and you're kind of very critical of your own body. But this woman obviously knew her husband was feeling down. Just ignore that because she wanted to make him feel better. So that vulnerability she put to one side, and she knew what would kind of cheer him up as well. And of course, when he came in, it did and it worked. And so putting the sex aside for one part, because it's not really about that. That was just a byproduct. It's the whole what she did for him and what he realized, what, you know, that she was doing that. And he knew her vulnerability and the fact she did it for him. And, you know, there was this communication between the two of them. Now, I think that's phenomenal. I think that story says so much in how two people can be like-minded and understand each other in a relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, that's a good example of unconditional love, isn't it? She risked her vulnerability to make him happy. So she put herself in a position to be unhappy because she was feeling vulnerable to make sure that she gave him happiness. So that, for me, is the highest form of love, isn't it? That's the unconditional love.
And when he told the lads what happened, and he said he wouldn't change his wife for anybody, and that is him saying, because, you know, a lot of guys will moan about the wives, you know, it's the typical thing, and I'm sure the wives moan about the husbands, but the fact that he turned around and said to his mates, I wouldn't change her for anything, she's a diamond, you know, that says a lot as well.
Absolutely. And I think that is what is so lacking in so many relationships, that it's fear keeping so many relationships together instead of that unconditional love that's keeping relationships together. And as I say, that's why I've been single on and off for so long, because I've not met anybody yet that we mutually feel that same level of, you know, high respect for each other. I want to make your life better. No, I want to make your life better. Great, let's get together then. I do. I just think there's so much. I think there's so much conditioned love in relationships. You do this for me, and then I'll do this for you. Instead of what she did, well, I'm just going to do this because I know it's going to make you happy, and that's what I'm here for, in a way to make you happy, not in a doormat way, because I love you so much. I watched the Schumacher documentary the other night, and I thought their relationship, him and his wife, was a very, very high level. She was talking on the documentary, a very similar high level. You could just tell that they had this mutual respect for each other, and that they absolutely adored each other after years and years of marriage. And, you know, it brought tears to my eyes, because it was like, wow, you know, you two have managed to get in that very small percentage of relationships that actually are, you know, that unconditional love.
I totally agree. You've nailed it on the head there when you said about, it's not about the score keeping, oh, you did this for me, I'll do this for you. It's nothing got to do with that. You go with your gut feeling, and if you're, and again, the giver, is about pleasing your partner. You know, you just want to please your partner, you know. Mm. And say, for example, from the, say, the sex side, right, for example, you know, as a giver, what you want to do is obviously please your partner and, you know, work to have really good sex and enjoyable sex, right? To say, wow, that was really enjoyable. I really like that. And that's not, to me, that's just an obvious thing that you would do in that kind of relationship. But there's people that kind of don't get it. I know there's women out there and they say, look, I'm going to fake an orgasm because I'm going to massage the husband's ego. Or they don't want sex, but they know that if they don't give him sex, that he'll probably go off and have an affair. Now, on the affair side, there is my understanding, and if I'm wrong with this, please, by all means, correct me. But my understanding is when men have affair, it's desperation. It's more really got to do with the physical side than the emotional side, where when women have an affair, the relationship is over because it's more got to do with the emotional rather than the physical. Although these days, life has changed a little bit and women are becoming... the science traits of men with women that they will go off and just do the physical thing and not have any emotional tie. So maybe society is changing in its own way.
Yeah, I could, but I've not read any research on it, but I could actually believe that. And I think ultimately it's that the person's needs are not being getting met in the marriage or the relationship. So, but instead of having the courage to sit and have that conversation, because people don't tend to generally like having difficult conversations that are going to bring up difficult answers. It's easier, isn't it, to sort of like, you know, get diverted. Oh, well, you'll meet my needs and, you know, oh, this is really good fun. But then, of course, it can often turn out to, you know, cause a lot of people pain. It's interesting because my friend got divorced during COVID. She was one that realised, gosh, I can't do with him at home 24/7, so I'm going to get divorced. So she's been divorced now for about a year. She got divorced right at the beginning of COVID. And she's just gone on a dating site and she's met a guy on a dating site who wants to take her out for the day and for something to eat. And she's saying to me, for God's sake, all I want is sex. I don't want to be taken out there. I don't want to go to, you know, the coast for the day. I just want to have sex. But he's the opposite. He's not that bothered about sex. And he wants to, like, you know, do the whole, like, taking her out. So I do think it's really interesting how men and women, you know, roles are tend to be reversing, and like you just said.
Yeah, it's funny. A friend of mine, I don't know where I mentioned this on the show before, but a friend of mine, a female friend of mine, was saying that she was dating there a couple of years ago. She went on dating sites and she met this guy and they met for a coffee and they were talking for 2 hours. And she said, oh, yeah, he seems to be a nice guy, you know, and we'll organise the meet again. And while they were getting up, finishing the coffee, he turned around to her and said, I just want to let you know, I like a lot of sex. And she said, that's it. He just blew it. He just blew 2 hours by coming out with that statement. And, you know, it's very hard. You know, I don't know. I mean, one of the things that I spoke to a friend of mine, I had a neighbour of mine who was, she had a bachelor's in education research and she was doing her psychology degree. And the two of us talked about putting together a book called Sex and Money. And because we found that from talking about, you know, psychology and everything else, that the two biggest factors in a relationship that caused most problems was sex and money, and kind of everything else is a byproduct of that. Well, this was our research. And so we were going to do write a book all about that. And here was my take on it, right? And see, I want to get your opinion on this, right? So from a sex and money point of view, the idea was we're going to have a questionnaire and you had 10 questions, right? And you said, right, so the questions for the money side would be, what are you like with money? Are you good with money, bad with money, and bad? So that would be the 10 questions. It'd be, you know, to get an idea. Now, there's no right or wrong answer. The whole idea is just to gauge your personality and the type of person you are when it comes to the likes of money. You know, are you good with money? Are you bad with money? And then have certain questions related to the money to give you an idea to reflect on what you're like with money. And the same thing was with sex. And one of the questions was, you and your partner start having sex and the phone goes, do you A, stop because you want to answer the phone? Do you ignore the phone but keep thinking who could be on the phone? Or do you be? Do you unplug the phone before you have sex? You know, so these questions were put together, and the whole idea would have been in the book to give people an idea of what their mindset was regarding money and what their mindset was regarding sex. So if you were going out dating and you were speaking to somebody, it would fast track that, you know, understanding of what your understanding was. Because if you spoke to a guy or a girl and you asked them, well, you know, are you good with money, bad with money? You know, and I know the sex thing is hard to kind of gauge, but it give you an idea of what you're like. So if you're looking for a partner and straight away they say things that don't match, then you know exactly, well, there's no point me going further with this because it's just not going to work. Mm. What do you think of that?
Good question. I think it would be a good... What do I think to that as in the concept or as in the book?
Well, just the concept of self-analysing what you are like. Because... Well, you tell me, you're the psychologist, you do a lot of divorces and you're speaking to couples and stuff like that. A lot of the time, they might come in and start arguing about how the toothpaste gets squeezed or it left dirty clothes on the floor. But when you keep drilling and drilling and drilling and finding out, does it tend to go back to either sex or money?
Well, I don't do couples counselling like that, because I speak to people that have got to the basically end of the tether and it's like, I think I want to get divorced. So they don't want the partner to come in. So I don't do couples counselling. But I used to work for, back in the day, I used to work for Relate Counselling, that obviously do couples counselling. But I was a trainer. I wasn't a counsellor at that point. I was a trainer for them. But they had this sort of like psychological model that was called the pinch crunch model. So it was basically, their idea is that all the little pinches, such as you haven't put the bins out, you haven't put the lid on the toothpaste, you haven't put the lid down on the toilet, that the idea is that they all are called pinches, and then eventually you get too many pinches and then it's the crunch, as in, you know, we argued about the fact that the chicken wasn't cooked correctly and that's it, I'm done, I need a divorce. So I think there always is something underlying, you know, it's not about the toothpaste, not about the chicken not being cooked. And I think it goes back to actually what you were talking about at the beginning of the call, which is about respect. That for me, if you've lost respect for the person that you're with, then for me, everything else then becomes an issue. It becomes a resentment. It becomes a snide comment, because actually you've lost the respect for that person as a human. And I think when you've lost the respect, it's then very hard to make any relationship work.
Yeah, you know what? You are on the same wavelength as me. I just had written down the word resentment, and you just said resentment.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because I think that, you know, that's a big thing in a relationship, resentment, for whatever reason, what it could be, as you say, pinch points. And when you also find that the person who you're with seems to be more respectful for people outside the relationship than for the relationship, that I think is also a red flag.
Yeah, exactly. Like I know one of my clients at the moment, you know, his idea is about money, going back to money, is that he likes to have a lot of money in the bank. So he doesn't like to spend it. He's not materialistic. He's not flashy. It's not about the gadgets and the cars. He just likes to feel secure with money. Whereas the person that he's been with has no respect for money. So she, you know, flashes the cash all the time. So they do argue about money, because he's like, where's the money gone out of the bank account type thing. Now, for me, that's not about money. That's about a lack of respect, that she's just, you know, she's not working. She's spending all this money. She's got no respect for money. But more importantly, she's got no respect for it's putting him in pain when she has this attitude to money. Because for me, if she loved him, she'd be like, I don't want to put you in pain. I don't want to put you in a place where you're unhappy. Now, equally, you could argue that, saying, well, you know, he should be the same about her, about, you know, about allowing her to spend cash or whatever. But and that's the point, isn't it? He's lost the respect for her. So whereas he's not being tight with money, he's just saying, can you wait until we've got to the end of the month to make sure there's money's left over, instead of spending all this money up front. But again, when you look at that relationship, it's broken because there's no respect there. She isn't bothered about making his day better, and he's not bothered about making her day better. So therefore, the respect has gone, and then that's when all the pinches will start to kick in, the resentments. Because actually, they're not arguing about the fact of who's put the bin out. They're actually mad with each other because you're spending the money and you're not. So that's just an example of that. It is often that, you know, that it's not about can I make your day better, because that respect has gone.
What's the situation regarding respect if the couple or one of the people in the relationship want to actually sort the problem out, but the other person doesn't want to talk about it or doesn't want to see somebody about it?
Yeah, well, if I have that, so if I have either man or woman come to me and say I've asked them to go to counselling but they weren't, or I've asked them to, you know, to sit and talk about it but they weren't, then I take a very sort of like black and white attitude to that of, well, if they're not willing to do anything to save this marriage and they're not willing to face their fears to go and sort it out, then I think that's your answer. That they're not willing to, they don't want to, they're not that bothered about it. And I get that some people hate counselling. I really get that. And I get that they'll have fear about going and talking to somebody about the state of the marriage if they're private. But for me, it goes back to the very same thing. But if I loved you enough and I wanted to make your life better and I wanted to make this marriage work, I would go and talk to somebody about it. So I've actually got an online course about handling divorce and separation, and I've actually got that written in my online course. If the other person won't talk about it and won't go and sort it out with a third party, then I'm sorry, that for me is your answer, that they're not bothered enough to want to go and sort it out. They're not willing to put themselves in that vulnerable position to go and sort it out.
Yeah, definitely. And again, to me, you know, taking the adult approach is to, we have a problem here, we have to recognize there's a problem, and the adult approach would be, let's go and try and fix it and speak to somebody about it. But if the person can't even speak about it, then obviously that's where the major issue is. Now, I know, you know, they always say about the man has to go off to his cave and think about it, and the woman wants to talk, but the man goes off. But I think in this day and age, the way things are as well, I think the opposite works as well. I think the women sometimes want to go off to the cave and, you know, not talk about it, because I know there's men out there who will want to talk about it. So society, the kind of the norms that we were brought up with, or we were taught about over the years, maybe from the 50s and 60s and 70s, I think there's a grey area now there. It's not black and white the way it used to be as much. I think now there is a shift. You know, like you have house husbands, you have not just housewives, and you have men who want to talk, women that don't want to talk. So I think there has been a shift. Which so it's not black and white the way it used to be. I think there's a big shift on. And is that a good thing? I think so. I think it's quite good. But there's also been a threat to the masculinity of men as well, with everything that's gone on. And we know that's purposely being done by the system anyway. And I think maybe some women feel the role of the man should be the breadwinner, should be the go out and kill the dinosaur and bring it back while they tend to cave. Maybe some women still think that's the case. I don't know. And maybe that causes a resentment because of that reason. The other thing would be also that either a man or woman, if they're working, maybe they feel that why should they be doing all the work? If the partner's not working. But then again, you know, the whole idea of, you know, working together as a couple and having, you know, the roles that they've accepted, you know, is important. Again, respect for each other. But it's very hard. I mean, it's very hard for a lot of people out there with everything, the pressures of society, what's going on, the taxes and all the bills and all the, you know, the taxes since the 60s has been incredible. The amount of tax we're paying now is unbelievable compared to what we were paying in the 60s. So I think there's an awful lot going on, and it's, and a couple is like, it's, you know, as a couple, it's like running a business. It really is. If you have more coming, going out than coming in, I mean, you have to, you know, I've been in that situation where you have to rob Peter to pay Paul, try and balance the books and, you know, juggle bills and all that kind of stuff. And, it's, you know, I can understand, for me, I suppose, and you, Rachel, If we have kind of some kind of level of corporate background and understanding, it helps. And I feel sorry for people who have no kind of concept where they will get the money will come in and they might go off down the pub and have, you know, and spend half the housekeeping money on drink or whatever. And you think, well, you know, if you don't have the money to spend it, why are you spending on it? But maybe that's just their way of getting out of the relationship or getting a break away from all the stress and worry. But it's only causing more issues in a relationship by doing that.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it goes back to the child adult, isn't it, that very few people know how to take responsibility and take accountability and are in that situation where I'll just do whatever I want. I mean, some of the stories that I hear of people that come to me and say, I'm thinking of getting divorced, but I'm not sure. And I say, okay, well, tell me why you're thinking of getting a divorce. And they'll give me all the examples of the behaviour by the other partner, whether it's man or woman. And I'm sat there in my head thinking, oh my God, I'd have got divorced years ago if I was you. And then they'll say, but I feel really guilty saying that I'm thinking of getting divorced because I don't want to upset them. Yet they've just told me like an hour of all the behaviours of why they think they want to get divorced. And, it just blows my mind because I'm like, gosh, you've been living like that in that unloving way for so long, but yet you're still questioning whether you've got a right to leave this marriage or relationship. And it just, you know, it can make me really sad sometimes. I think that's hell that you've been living. That's not a loving place to be. That's just hell. Get out of it now. But, you know, they feel inferior, they feel helpless, they feel stuck, they feel that they'll be judged as a failure for getting divorced. There's still so many social constructs out there about getting divorced that, you know, you're a failure, that, you know, you won't be able to be single, that single people, are not attractive because they can't get, you know, partners. And it's just ridiculous. It is. Need to say, 100% hit rate of people that come to me thinking of getting divorced, that they all do get divorced. So they just need a little bit of a nudge and a little bit of permission. And at the end of the day, Alan, it's just fear. When you move all the noise out the side, my kids will be upset, my parents will be upset, I won't be able to afford it. It's just noise. It's about, I'll say to them, this is about making sacrifices. So yes, you might not live in a 3-bedroomed, detached house on your little estate, that you live in. Yes, you might have to move into, like I did when I got divorced. I lived in a beautiful house. It was, when I got divorced, we sold it for $500,000. I moved into a 2-bedroom flat. You know, so I gave up this beautiful house to move into a 2-bedroom flat with my son because it's all I could afford on my wages. You have to make sacrifices, but I was so much happier on my own. I felt so much safer. I felt so much more empowered. My 3-year-old son was so much happier. You have to sometimes make sacrifices to be able to live in joy.
Yeah, definitely. I know. And I think the more this divide comes and people start waking up and realizing that, you know, it's all about your energy, keeping a high. And if somebody's pulling your energy down, because sometimes the fear could not be coming from you, but it could be coming from the person you're with, you know. For example, what I normally say, you know, when you're driving with somebody and there's people, somebody is in the passenger seat and they don't make a good passenger and they're a nervous passenger, although they drive a car themselves. And because they lack confidence in their driving, they try and put that fear and their lack of confidence on you. And you think, well, no, I'm more confident than you are driving, rather than obviously their inexperience. You know, you see the people driving on the road and the speed limit could be, 80 miles an hour and they're driving at 20. And they're the ones in your front seat and you're driving at, say, 50 or 60 and they're panicking. They think like it's too fast. So they put the fear. And I've been in that situation where I'd say to a person, say, look, don't put your fear of driving or your inexperience on me. That's not being cocky or being arrogant. You know, it's just, I personally drive at a speed that I'm comfortable with. That doesn't mean I speed. It just means that I'm not going to be driving at 20 miles an hour when the speed limit's 80, you know. And I think, again, people can put in relationships and friendships, put their own fear or try and put their fear onto you. And you have to, turn around and go, hang on a minute, that's your fear. It's not my fear. There's a question here. I have two questions for you there. Critical Ali, question for a guest. In the final analysis, communication properly is the key to any relationships, including marital. Most people's marriages fail because of apathy and lack of inertia. Would she agree?
I would absolutely agree that communication is key. And I think this goes back to what I was saying before, that because if we haven't had healthy communication modelled by our parents about how to resolve arguments, how to assess each other's needs, how to compromise, if we haven't had that modelled to us, then how have we ever learnt it? So I think, you know, that's why a lot of people don't have these honest conversations, because they might lose the temper, like they saw that the father lost the temper, or, you know, they might think, I'm scared of, you know, being, my ex-husband was a great sulker, so he would sulk for about 3 days at a time if he didn't get his own way. And so I would give in all the time when I was first with him, because I was like, I can't stand him sulking, I can't stand him ignoring me. And then as I got my power, and as I read books like Feel the Fear and The Assertive Woman and all books like that, I realised that, you know, well, if he wants to go off and sulk like a child, that's his behaviour. So, you know, one day I said to him, I won't be responding to that behaviour. So you sulking isn't going to get a response from me. And so he stopped sulking. Now, you know, that was only because I learned to be able to communicate and set my boundaries and be assertive. So I actually agree with what she's put there. It is about honest communication. And I think the apathy is that a lot of people, we get very high standards of accepting crap in relationships, and we tend to accept the unacceptable, and we tend to tolerate the intolerable, or the intolerable, I should say. So before we know it, we're just living this life. You know, it's like water going under a door. It happens very slowly. And before we know it, we're in this really unhappy place, but it hasn't got unhappy really suddenly. It's slowly and slowly got to a point where the joy has been taken out of it. You know, the communication has gone, the respect has gone. And then, you know, that's why the empty nest syndrome happens, isn't it? That the kids have gone, and then it's like, well, actually, what have me and you got in common anymore? Oh, I don't know, let's get divorced. So yeah, I would totally agree with all those points.
And it's harder, obviously, as you get older, to meet people. But then again, on saying that, there's a friend of mine who is single, and he's a little bit older than me, and he was going, oh, I'm on all the dating sites and everything else. And I said, I was nearly mentioning his name there. I said to him, I said, look, let me give you a tip. First of all, there's no point being on dating sites. You need to get out and go and do something you enjoy, and in groups that have a mixed of men and women. I said, dating sites are no good. You want to get out there. And I said, the spiritual industry is full of women. It's actually 50%. It's mostly women, and 50% of the men involved are gay. That's the statistics. So, you know, if you really want to meet open, like-minded people that are on a good frequency, not everybody, but, you know, you'll meet some people. Then I said, you know, get involved in the spiritual side, because he's a little bit spiritual in his own way. And I said, but you have to get out there. I said, you can't just be relying on dating sites and, oh, I'm just going to put my details up, but I'm not going to look on the dating site. I'm going to wait for somebody to actually contact me, because I'm a bit shy and I lack a bit of confidence. And I said, well, no, that's not going to work. You know, you need to have that, you know, fake it till you make it. I know that's a saying, but sometimes you have to do that. I have another question here from Joan, and Joan wants to know, has your guest come across people where they just get annoyed with their partner, so divorce is the answer? I believe people like an easy way out.
In the sense that they don't communicate and they don't want to resolve it. So well, they just
say, okay, I'm going to divorce you. Literally, you have a fight and then that's it. It's divorce. And there's no kind of sitting down and talking.
I think I personally haven't had a client that has come to me like that, but I think if that does happen, what I would think for that is there's probably been underlying problems for quite some time that maybe have just not been discussed. Because I think the thing with divorce is, my experience is, it's the end. When somebody is considering divorce, it's never been, oh, I'm going to wake up tomorrow and I'm going to think I'll get divorced. It's been a very long road of being unhappy, being, you know, trying to work out what's the best decision, maybe trying to sort things out, trying to have conversations, trying to improve things. I've never had anybody that's just said, oh, we've had an argument, I'm leaving. So maybe there's stuff been going on in that person that they haven't been sharing with you, but they have maybe been unhappy for a long time, and then the one argument has been that's it, I'm done. But I've never personally had experience of that. But it doesn't mean to say it doesn't happen.
Yeah, well, some people, as I say, just either don't get it or you're on a different wavelength and they're happy with their lot, and other people want to go off and learn more and link up with people who have a certain mindset. It's just, we are who we are, and I suppose if you get to the stage where you have just a change of energy in a relationship, depending on your situation, because as I say, it's not, you know, black and white. There are underlying conditions there why some people might not be able to go their own way. And just, you know, we mentioned about that earlier. But yeah, it is what it is. But moving forward, because I'm just watching the time. So we're near that time, and I want to kind of leave on a positive note. You know, at the end of the day, people have to find their own power, find their own energy, and find their own respect for themselves in the relationship. Because didn't Wayne Dyer say, if we start changing the things we think about, the things that we do change, something like that? So we have to start finding confidence in ourselves and changing the way we want, and stand up for ourselves and being respectful and asking people to respect us. You know, and maybe by doing that, we will see a shift and a change with not just in relationships, but people around us as well.
Absolutely. And just finishing on Feel the Fear, chapter 4 is one of the best chapters, because basically that's what she talks about in there, that you can spend so long waiting for somebody else to change, but actually the person who do needs to change is yourself. And that's exactly what happened with me in my marriage. I tried to, you know, help my husband to change, because he was negative, he was a bit of a drinker, you know, he wasn't the easiest person to live with. So I was like saying, look, why don't you go and, you know, go and have some counselling, or go and have some, you know, aromatherapy, or, you know, go and have some, you know, massages to try and get yourself to, you know, be better, and, you know, why don't you stop drinking so much, and da da da. And then when I read chapter 4 and thought, no, it's me that needs to change, it's me that has to stop accepting the behaviour that he is displaying towards me. And as soon as I made that shift in my head of like, well, I'm going to change me, then the situation eventually got to a point where I wasn't willing to accept the way that he was behaving. And it's because I'd stopped expecting him to change and I started to work on myself. So you're absolutely right. We stay in the relationship which our self-worth believes that we should stay in. And so once you can start to improve your self-worth, then you will accept relationships which are unloving.
Okay, and I was going to, let me see what else is on the list here. I was going to say, why are you the fixer? Because, you know, some people are the fixer, they go into a relationship and they feel that they can cure or fix the person that they start going dating, and realizing after a period of time that there's no way you're going to fix them, but they think they will fix them.
Yeah, absolutely. And that often comes down again to the idea of codependency, that if I fix you, then I am worthwhile. If I fix you, then I am good enough. If I fix you, then you will love me. If I fix you, then I am dirty, dirty, dirty. So again, once you realise that you don't need to fix anybody else, you're good enough just in yourself, who you are, you are worthy in yourself. You don't need to fix somebody else to make them love you, because you are lovable exactly as you are. Then you realise you don't need to fix people or people please, or, you know, make other people's emotions happier, because you say, no, I'm lovable in myself as I am right at this moment. So, you know, take me as you find me. And if I don't do anything to fix you, then I'm lovable, and I know I'm lovable.
So just going to finish up, but just touching base for people on what we talked about, about givers and takers and energy. You know, if you are single and you're looking for a relationship, I feel anyway, in myself, and just my opinion based on my research and obviously what myself and Rachel talked about tonight, if you're looking for a relationship, and I would be looking for a giver with an adult mind, because if you get a giver with an adult mind, chances are it's going to have a higher success rate of working out than being with a taker with a child mind. So that's just kind of a tip for myself after years of studying this, and obviously Rachel coming on the show and getting tips from Rachel as well. Rachel, you know, it's been fantastic. I love having you on because, you know, psychology is something, as I say, I've been involved in since 1986, and it's just a brilliant subject. And the more I kind of get into it, and okay, there's more questions come up than answers, and the whole idea of respect with the circle, maybe that's something I will try and research and analyze, and, you know, and try and understand that. But I do think at the end of the day, we have to respect our own time and respect ourselves. And if people don't respect, you know, us, then there's no point having them around you, because, you know, if they're not going to respect you, what's the point having them around? And I think with the COVID thing and everything else going on, maybe our friendships have dwindled down a little bit, you know. But I know for a fact that, you know, I am in a position now that I'm not wasting my time with people who don't respect my time. You know,
exactly.
It's that simple. I'm not doing it anymore. I'm not going to waste my time with people, because if they can't be bothered respecting my time, why the hell should I respect their time? And it's as simple as that. And maybe just a couple of things there in myself that I need to look at, you know, as well, you know, self-analyze, because I am kind of very kind of corporate when it comes to timing. You know, I mean, I don't know about you, but when I say to people, look, I'll meet you at 2 o'clock. You know, I'm there like a 10 to 2, quarter to 2, whatever, because I've, you know, if it's a week in advance, you know, if I say, right, next Wednesday, we meet you at 2 o'clock. Okay, brilliant. So they turn up and go, oh, well, I'm sorry, I'm late. And you think, well, you had a week to make sure you got here for 2 o'clock.
Exactly. Exactly. It's lack of respect. It's based like your electrician, isn't it, saying, I don't respect you. I've got a friend like that, and she's very nearly not a friend because of that very thing. It's just disrespect.
Oh, you know when they say, oh, well, I'm a bad timekeeper. No, it's just being disrespectful, that you can't be bothered to make the effort. That's your excuse. Anyway, we could go into, there has to be a part two in there, Rachel. We have to do a part two and we have to get back into it and do more. And I'm sure I'd love to have you back on to do a part four. And we'll talk more psychology. I have to finish the book, by the way, because I am reading Feel Fear. It's in the car. I am reading it.
Yes, let's talk about that next time then. You finish the book and then we can talk about Feel the Fear, because it's a brilliant subject.
Brilliant stuff. Brilliant stuff. Okay, well, listen, thanks a lot for coming on. Before I let you go, give out all your details and all your websites on what you do. And if people want to ring you for private sessions or have a talk, give out your details there.
Okay, so my website is Rachel, which is rachel-alexander.com. That's rachel-alexander.com. I'm on Twitter, which is author Rach, A-U-T-H-E-R-R-A-C-H, at author Rach. And the sessions that I focus on, as well as divorce, are spiritual growth coaching sessions. So if you're interested in spiritual growth and you want to be taken through the process of being spiritually grown, then I offer one-to-one sessions, obviously by Zoom, Skype, etc., and they start at around £55 for 90 minutes. So that's what I do. Get in touch. You can get in touch via my website, rachel-alexander.com.
Brilliant stuff. Rachel, thanks a lot for coming on. Just stay with me there for a minute and we'll go off to a musical break and we'll be back after this.
You're listening to Alan James on Circle of White Light Radio and People's Internet Radio.
There you go, folks. That was Rachel Alexander. I love having Rachel on talking psychology, and I hope you've learned something from the information that we talked about tonight, relationships and dealing with, you know, not just relationships with your, you know, wife, partner, whatever, but friendships and everything else, and about you valuing your time and respecting yourself and your time. There's no point having people around or having friends around that disrespect your time, and you know, why they'll only frustrate you, you'll only get annoyed. What's the point? So the best thing to do is, you know, keep them at a distance and you know, and get on with things. It is what it is. You have to, because it'll only affect your energy, and we're all energy. And if you have kind of negative energy or you're upset or everything, that's going to bring your energy down. So you need to be keeping your energy up. You know, Dr. Bruce Lipton talked about epidemiology, about the kind of, you can't be in both camps. You're either going to be happy and upbeat, or you're going to be negative and low. And of course, we know that causes, you know, illnesses and stuff like that if you have a low energy. So you have to stay positive as much as you can. Okay, so that's the kind of whole idea. Now, talking about the psychology of what's going on with the Irish government and the lockdown, or the potential lockdown. Now, we know on the 22nd of October, they've extended the actual powers to November. Quite conveniently, you know, these emergency powers, they've extended to October because maybe they're dangling the carrot. You know, they go, oh yeah, the 27th of October, we're going to open everything up and, you know, it'll all be perfect. Unless, of course, NPHET come out, or Tony Holohan comes out and go, oh, there's a new virus coming out. You heard about the new virus. Now we have the bad virus, or whatever the virus name is going to be. You know, and they'll use that, and they will say, you know, we were going to open up and let everybody get on and do what they want, but the new virus has come out, and we don't really want to lock down, but we're going to have to lock down. Now, we are going into the autumn winter, and there's going to be flu viruses going around. We know that. Every year it's the same thing, and has been since the year splash. But this is what they're going to say. So the flu will go, the flu virus will go, and it'll be another strain of something that's gone around, and they'll want to lock down everything again. Now, I'm not saying that that's going to happen. We might be lucky, but I'm just saying when people are mad on power and control and they want to extend the powers, then obviously they're gearing us up for something. They're dangling the carrot. So let's see what happens. Obviously, you know, that's all I'll say. Let's see what happens anyway. Okay, now my guest on the show next week is a chap called Mark Atwood. If you haven't seen Mark, Mark has been doing a lot of video work on YouTube, and he does his own show and he interviews his own people. And I had a one-to-one with Mark there a couple of weeks ago on Zoom, and we had a great chat, and we really are on the same kind of wavelength, the same way you're thinking. So it'd be great to have Mark on to get his take on what's going on. He's an English guy living over here, and he has kids, he's a dad and stuff. So we'll have a great chat, I'm sure. We'll talk about everything and anything that's going down. So that'll be great to look forward to as well. Have a talk with Mark and get down to the practical things that are going on. But thanks to everybody for logging in. I'm going to love you and leave you now. I don't know what the situation is regarding PIR. Now, I've tried to contact Vin from PIR, and he's not getting back to me. I know other people have tried to contact Vin, and he's not getting back to them. I don't know why. Again, we talked about respect on the show tonight. What's going on? Why isn't Vin getting back to any of us? As a mark of respect, it would be nice if Vin actually contacted one of us just to tell us what the state of play is with the PIR stream. I find it, in all honesty, a bit disrespectful that Vin hasn't contacted either me or somebody else to find us, to let us know what's going on. I'd appreciate if he could contact us and let us know what's going on with the stream so we can sort it out either way, because I know there's other people there want to get shows up and running. So if anybody is talking to Vin or is in contact with Vin, if they can actually go ahead and ask him to contact us and we can sort out the stream once and for all, that would be fantastic. Okay, so that's it for me. I don't know who's up next on PIR. I know the guys are kind of doing their own streams, so you can check it out on PIR there. If you had a question there and we didn't get to it, I'm sorry about that, but we're trying to keep it kind of positive at the end as usual. So thank you for all your questions. Thanks to everybody who logged on the show tonight on the chat room and just tuned in and gave me 2 hours of your time. Much appreciated. What's on during the week? Well, I'm just carrying on doing my work in my shed and getting on doing that. Check out for people who are DIY people and want to hang up their tools in the shed. Check out a thing called French Cleats, right? CLEATS, French Cleats on YouTube. It's something that I'm doing in my workshop because it means that you can put your tools anywhere on the wall. Brilliant idea, French Cleats, really, really good idea. So check them out for your DIY people if you're interested in that. Otherwise, I'm going to love you and leave you. Take care, have a good weekend or what's left of it, and we'll see you next week. Take care, and bye bye.
You have been listening to Circle of White Light Radio on circleofwhitelight.com. focusing on solutions and thinking different.